after we're done podcasting. Let's hang around
okay,
because
I think we're going here.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
Go to the live stream and see if we're live.
Okay.
We should be.
YouTube.
I have too many windows up here. I can't keep track of what I'm looking at.
It's poor management. Okay.
Are we there?
I'm checking.
Hello, world.
It says we are live now, so okay. Well, do you want to play the theme music so we can pretend like...
That I do have ready to go.
Okay, and are you recording this?
Oh my god, you've just quadrupled the... no, I'm not. Okay, here it comes. It's going to yell at everybody.
Recording in progress.
Just so that you know, we are now recording.
Play the song.
Bombs and bands.
All systems go.
Bombs and bands.
Okay, that's fine.
Bombs and bands.
Bands, bands, bands.
This rebel has a cause.
Bombs and bands.
We begin as wanderers, and we are wanderers still.
Okay, welcome to the 12th live edition of Bombs and Bands of Wednesday Rants. As always, I'm your humble and dedicated host, John Wilder, coming to you from an undisclosed location hidden deep beneath the surface of the earth. With me, as always, is Mark.
Howdy.
And the missus.
I'm marginally here and making the technology go, I think.
if only you could...
I'm so out of practice.
Danger Will Robinson.
Yeah, exactly.
We've had a combination of different things that have kept us away.
I'm on vacation.
All the way from viruses to meetings to other things. But we are here once again live tonight. And in fact, we have some tremendous show for you tonight. Up first, the missiles will talk once again about the mysterious backpack jetpack man.
Jetpack man. Yes, the jetpack guy.
And being just in time for the post-Halloween, I've got the article from spellcasting to podcasting, Inside the Life of a Teenage Witch. That's very professional, getting that comp and the sniffle on the radio.
Really? Because I had my mic muted. I was muted. It must have picked your mic must have picked that up. Because I can hear you.
Okay. All right.
All right, hang on.
Yes, I can hear you completely now.
I could hear you. I could hear you before. Okay. Mm-hmm. I could hear you before.
All right. Well, clearly whatever is going on here, this is Pugsley's work again, that nothing is ever working the same way it did the last time because Pugsley did something to it. This is Pugs.
Okay. So
I will just try to not cough into the mic. I thought it was muted. Sorry.
And also try and avoid those wet, snorty sniffles.
I know. Sorry. I thought I was muted. You know how I feel about those things. You know how I feel about those things.
Maybe it's better this way. Hello, mucus, my old friend.
Yeah, like I said. Well, okay, from my end, I didn't hear it because my mic was muted.
The mountains are alive with the sound of mucus.
And all of my men will run with mucus. Okay.
Yeah, that's Pugsley.
We haven't even gotten to Mark's story. Boy, what a bunch of professionals we are.
And you know something funny is that I'm just kind of booming volume-wise into my own ears over here, and you I can barely hear.
And you're just talking over all of us. Anyway.
I know.
Especially my beautiful singing. Mark has the story that is the capstone, how to build a disaster survival team. Assemble. Disaster survival team, just like the Avengers. So, all of that being said, the missus, are you ready to take us through the LAX, or should we banter?
I have no idea. I don't know that all the banter in the world is going to save me tonight.
I know. I mean, You're so professional.
I know. Well, okay. So, and just a little background on this evening is that I was asleep before this podcast, and I told John. Go ahead and tell that story. Yeah, you can describe that.
So she said, you know, get me up about 45, 50 minutes before the podcast starts. And so I walk by, and I gently touch her foot. And it looks like I'd thrown a box of snakes in the bed with her. What the heck? Just yelling and screaming. It was like Linda Blair from The Exorcist. Not The Exorcist 2, but Exorcist 1. Just screaming and writhing on the bed. And not in a good way. So it was kind of horrifying.
What the hell are you doing?
That was my question.
FBI, open up!
Yeah, it was kind of like that.
Let's put it this way. That escalated quickly.
It did.
So
I was ready to go all ninja on you when you woke me up.
No, you weren't.
I was!
Not unless, it takes you 5 minutes to get up.
It does not.
All right, why don't you tell us about the new theory about the mysterious LAX jetpack man.
Oh, my goodness. Now I have to rifle through all of my... Okay, where did that go? Oh, there it is. It's right in front of me.
Literally, told you. You chose...
Yeah, I did. So we talked about this almost a year ago. It was November last year. It was one of the first podcasts that we did where we talked about the jetpack man, who had been spotted several times over LAX. Well, now they think maybe they haven't figured out what was actually the cause of this. And they think it actually is not someone flying over Los Angeles. It's something floating over Los Angeles. In fact, they think it is a balloon of the main character from Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas, Jack Skellington. And there are actually close-up pictures of this.
Well, that's just awful.
It's disappointing in a way, I think. I was hoping it was a guy in a jetpack.
I was hoping it was Elon Musk. Because
I know.
Or if it weren't Elon himself, it could have been one of his musketeers. They all wear the same deodorant, you know.
Is it musky?
I still think it was swamp gas.
But they all wear the same deodorant, though.
Yeah.
SpaceX body spray. Sorry.
I know. Oh wait, we have this just coming in. We have our president has something to say about the jetpack guy. Here it is. Mr. President, to you.
True and international average of pressure.
Okay, that clears it up.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, and I guess maybe that's the last time we'll talk about the richest African American, Elon Musk. All right. I'm going to take it to via the Federalist, and this is just in time for post-Halloween. The name of the article is From Spellcasting to Podcasting, Inside the Life of a Teenage Witch. Now, the one thing I'll note is you are safe from a witch if the witch is dyslexic, because dyslexic witches cannot spell. Okay. And also, did you hear that there's a rideshare app for witches? It's called Broom Service. All right.
Is that how Kamala Harris gets around?
I have such a good joke for that, but we're trying to stay at PG, so I'm just going to skip that. Okay. So the whole gist of this particular article, and I do recommend this one, is that Washington Post put out an article talking about witches are all in with the left. And in fact, I'll quote directly from the article, which then quotes from the Washington Post. I'll tell you so it doesn't seem too much like Inception. This is from the Federalist article. It says, the Washington Post article also claims that contemporary witches, mediums, and other would-be consorters with false gods and demons strongly support leftist politics. The most prominently mentioned are no surprise to anyone paying attention. Child sacrifice, child mutilation, ritual self-mutilization, sexual abuse. In other words, abortion and LGBT activism. Here's a quote from the Post. While Bennett mostly does encouraging how-to media posts, they also agree with some witches who feel the label obliges practitioners to be politically outspoken, including on issues regarding the environment and the rights of sexually and gender minorities. Bennett organized a fundraiser with several other occult practitioners running this week to benefit women seeking abortions in Texas, which just passed a highly restrictive law forcing people to pursue the procedure out of state. Bennett and others will hold classes and lectures for a fee, with proceeds going to the Lola Fund. So, again, is
pizza anyone for everyone?
Yes. Well, is anyone surprised that witches are all in for the left?
Oh, this is a true thing too. I'm not surprised at all. Okay, so I run kind of some eclectic circles online. They have no idea who I am. I'm very well camouflaged. So I've seen this up close and personal, and I will attest that this is absolutely true. People who tend to flutter on the witchy side of things, and, you know, people who are goths, Wiccans, that sort of thing, absolutely all in for the left.
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing. Not personally, because I'm not, you know, I work all day. I don't have time to socialize. My wife's had some friends and that have gotten into the Reiki and energy healing stuff, and yeah, they've all turned flaming leftists over the last few years. So it's, and I don't know. I mean, maybe it's related. I see occasionally you see an article pop up about how people on the left are more likely to suffer from mental illness. So maybe there's a connection there.
Well, there's a little bit more here. It's talking about the several of these witches. This is both of the witches explain on the episode their spiritual paths, including what they characterize as strongly negative experiences with conservative religion, especially around strict rules and anti-LGBTQ teachings. There, and here's a direct quote from them: "No one walks the same path. Even if everyone had the same tradition, everyone will do it their own way," says the co-host, who was born into a Cuban Catholic family. "There will be some deviation that's rooted in our own truths, because that's honestly what matters in all this, coming back to ourselves." So what was it? What was the tenet of Satanism? Was it "do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law"? I mean, yeah, this is classic.
You know, quite honestly, you know, okay, so these same people, right? I listen to them talk about Christianity and stuff and how Christianity should be, because, again, they don't like being judged, right, for all these things that they do. And I will say that one of these people that I do know, and this is not someone I know in person, I know them only online, but after this person talking about their private life for a long time, finally this person did kind of come out and admit to this entire group of people that, yes, I really am living my life as a high-priced call girl. So these are the kind of people, yeah, I know, right? So these are the kind of people that I'm talking about. And, you know, it's weird, because they do seem to think that what Jesus was preaching was, do whatever you want as long as you feel good about it. And I'm like, I don't recall the central tenet of Christianity being, do what thou wilt. Yeah, that was kind of that other thing. Yeah.
Is this the same Jesus that got a whip and whipped moneylenders and overturned their tables in the temple? Is it the same guy?
You know, I think according to this group that really he had the whip because they were having some sort of orgy. I mean, really, it's that sort of reading of Christianity. And then there are the ones who just hate Christianity, you know, regardless of what it is.
Well, and that's, that's the unique thing about this is the leftists want to try and school people who actually believe in religion on their religion. Well, Jesus really meant that you should be tolerant.
Jesus was really a communist, and that we should share all the things.
Yes.
No, I think that's a fundamental misreading of it. I mean, I'm a theologian, but yeah.
Yeah, the central tenet of Christianity is not do whatever you want all the time.
Right.
So,
As long as it's your truth, it's okay.
Yes, and that is. It comes down to creating your truth, not the truth, your truth.
Right.
But, I've long held that leftism is a religion, but it's based on rejection of true, things that are true and things that are beautiful and things that are good. If you look at the art that's created, for the most part, outside of religion, it's just mocking of that which is true and beautiful and good. What do you think, Mark?
Well, you know, one of the things that sort of popped in my mind when I was reading the article through briefly was the, I don't know if irony is the right word, but it was strange to me that the Washington Post would report on this and report on it in such a serious manner when just a couple of years ago, two, 3 years ago, they were mocking anybody who had anything to say about John Podesta and the spirit cooking and so forth like that as being a complete wacko theory, conspiracy theory or however they wanted to phrase it. But, but essentially that theory, though, was saying the same thing that they're reporting here, that there are people on the left who believe in the occult and using the occult to get ahead, and that involves injury to children.
Well, again, the principles of evil are to subvert that which is good. It's to take...
Hey there, demons. It's me, your boy.
All right. But it is. It's.
I completely threw you off track, didn't I?
Well, but I said it earlier. I said it's based on the rejection of the true and the beautiful and the good. And
I'm already a demon.
I found those just for your story.
But it's based on taking that which is bad and presenting it as good. That which is ugly and presenting it as beautiful. And that which is true and presenting it as false. Those are the sorts of inversions that you see from people that are really and truly evil. I mean, that which is man and pretending it's a woman. I'm sure that just got a check mark on YouTube for us. So.
A way to get us banned.
Well, that's for next week. So, Mark, you ready to move along to yours from the sure. Urban Survival site, which sure. is not George Yours. Urban Survival site. Urban Survival. I'm going to shut up. Blah, blah, blah. Take it away.
See, you're out of practice, too. I'm not all the right, only
so
one.
So the article is How to Build a Disaster Survival Team. It's written by Rich Murphy, and as you indicated, it's from a website called Urban Survival Site is the full name. This particular article is discussing some of the traits and skills that you would want for a survival team and a disaster survival team. Now, I'm going to say that up front that I'm not exactly sure what they mean by, well, I don't think they're actually thinking of a disaster survival team. This is more like, you know, the 1 second after scenario where you're on your own forever. But it does have some, one of the things I liked about it and it brings up at the very beginning is something that the author considers more important than even having someone with skills, which is a list of basically how they fit together with other people or how they get along. So like the first requirement he talks about is the ability to get along with others, which of course is, you know, really obvious. You don't want a sociopath in your group if you don't, you know, if you can not have with them. Another point he raises is that they're like-minded about survival. And basically this has to do with people in your group, whether, you know, how motivated are they going to be? If they don't really take survival seriously, they're not going to put in the work and time to prepare. I'm a little bit ambiguous about that one, just because you may want to have people that, you know, maybe you're not out practicing with them on weekends, I guess. You know, I know that there's groups out there that do that, but you know, you want to be on good terms with them because they may have valuable skills or resources that would be good to have. He talks about being committed to the team, and notes that people who aren't willing to contribute aren't a help, they're a hindrance. And I think that's very true. I mean, you can see that in any group. I remember in college being on group projects where, you know, essentially you had one or two people doing 90% of the work and everyone else just sort of,
as I look at this, I'm going to go back to there are no, there are no atheists in foxholes. Once things start to get bad, people start to get very amenable to getting along with others. They start to get very like-minded about the desire and commitment. The question is, in many, I'm reading this as talking about the preparation beforehand. So it's not so much a disaster survival team. It's finding people who are willing to prepare beforehand.
Yes, that is the point on this, is to put together a group that will be able to function together after SHTF goes down and everybody's thrown back to the Middle Ages, I guess, technologically. Well, I mean, even thinking of some of the worst disasters I can think of, there's so much material around us that I'm not sure that any disaster, no matter how horrible, would in actuality throw people back to a more primitive period over, you know, an extended, you know, over the long term. And by long term, I mean more than 5 or 10 years.
Well, you know, looking at this, one of the things that comes to my mind when you talk about, I think about disasters on a scale. And again, a level zero disaster is, oh my gosh, you know, the stores are closed. I can't go get a milkshake right now. And then a level 10 disaster is, well, that used to be a nice planet, but now it's just bare rock. Survival is a continuum and disasters are a continuum and they have gradations. But in most of the people think about, you know, kind of a basic breakdown in law and order that may or may not return in the near term. And when I think about that, I think about Dunbar's number. And I think about groups like this. I think about Dunbar's number, which means, that's the concept that there's a certain ideal size of a group for humans that seems to have been about the same size as, you know, let's call it the Neolithic tribes in Europe, and about 150, maybe 200 people. And 150, 200 people, you can know those people very well. You can learn to trust 150, 200 people very well. But you get much bigger than that, you start to develop factions. And pretty soon you have two groups. So I start to think that a group of 4 or 5 people is ludicrously small, and a group of, 10,000 is ludicrously large. I think there's probably some optimal size. But again, I think these groups typically coalesce around this, you know, after the event has occurred.
Yes. And that's... I think for most people that are prepping, really, they are going to coalesce around a group after the disaster. I don't, you know, unless, I mean, they're not going to be putting together a group of like-minded survivalists and have those groups last. I know, particularly here in Idaho, which seems to be really popular as a location for preppers to move, you know, it's not infrequent to see somebody try to put together a community of preppers or survivalists and have the whole thing fly apart within 2 or 3 years, because that's the only thing that draws them together. And then all these differences start popping up, and then there, you know, and there's arguments over money and who owns the land, et cetera, if they've, you know, gone together into sort of a more communal type situation. But you know, it doesn't really last. I mean, I think your basic is always going to be your family, and then expanding your tribe out from that a little bit further. I think that a church congregation is probably a really good basic group, especially for urban or suburban preppers.
Well, one of the things that binds people together is a certain commonality. You have to have something in common. And you mentioned just, you know, two of the most basic things that are tremendous drivers of people together, you know, blood and religion. I mean, when I say blood, I think, okay, I really hope I can trust my brother. I hope I can trust my wife. I hope I can trust my kids. And in fact, there's some basic trusts that come with that, because you're investing in each other. And similar when you talk about being invested at a religious level. I mean, if we believe the same way, then there's a shorthand of trust there.
Yeah, and you know, it's actually sort of interesting to bring that, mention that about the strength there, particularly the trusts involved with family. A long time ago, there was this, it was one of the early shows where they would throw people into the different situations, and this one was based around, or at least they had an episode that was couples that were put into different situations, and so one team was made up of couples that were married, and then the other team was the couples were just you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, type of situation. And it was really interesting as they went through these different survival scenarios, you know, or dangerous scenarios, how the married couples tended to pull together and they trusted each other a lot more. And they were willing to put in, you know, that extra oomph to help their person, you know, their wife, spouse. Like, for instance, one of them was this contest where they had the wife or girlfriend was in a underwater cage that was locked with a padlock, and the husband had to dive down and open it up.
I've got to note that you didn't say the wife and the girlfriend.
No, they did them separately. But yeah, they, you know, and it was interesting because there was a lot more, basically the married couples just wiped the board on all the others. So, but getting back to this, yeah, and he sort of mentions another thing he mentions is proximity. He says, I've seen too many survival teams which are scattered all across town. If the people in your team don't live close together or have a common place they can use as a survival retreat, they aren't going to be able to help each other out when the time comes. And they, again, you know, that's true. But you know, on the other hand, I think, like, if you're talking about, again, family, they're going to naturally come together, you know, unless they hate each other. Like, you know, you always have that. But after that, he gets into what he considers essential skills and then some other skills to add. What I'm going to say about that is, I'm not sure what your essential skills are going to be, because I think it depends on the disaster. And I think that maybe
what the person has at times may be more important than some of the skills. I mean, for instance, if there's been a hurricane, you're going to want somebody with a chainsaw.
have you read any of the Twitter streams of Marxists when they talk about what they're going to do at the commune? I'll be the poet.
I'll make the lattes.
Well, yeah, I'll just add this. I think the best book that I've ever read about surviving as a group survival is a book by I don't know how to pronounce this, Nechama Tech, but it's Defiance, the Belsky partisans. They were Polish Jews. They were four brothers, these Belsky brothers. They were Jewish, living in a rural area in Poland at the outbreak of World War II and the Nazis coming in. They fled into the forest, but they started gathering other Jewish survivors around them. And I think eventually although they split it into two camps, they eventually had about a thousand people living in a forest that they were preparing for. And, you know, that book, I think, has a really good explanation of what some of the skills and assets that would be good for a group. You know, now, again, they were living in the forest because, you know, the Nazis were going to come after them. Maybe it would have been different if they were, you know, they didn't have a hostile government trying to hunt them down. But because they were in the forest, they didn't really raise much in the way of food. Most of their food they got was from stealing either from Nazis or stealing from peasant farmers. And because of that,
you keep using that word that's gonna get us banned.
What?
Political party from the German political party.
I'm sorry, the National Socialist Workers party. Okay, so the German socialists were trying to track down these people. And so they would steal from the German socialists and also from the farmers that were in the area in and about the forest where they were hiding. And so what it became is it became almost a warrior type society where to have any status at all, you know, you either had to have a firearm or you had to have some extremely useful skill. And those skills turned out to be, you know, like tailoring, where you could actually design and make clothes, not just sewing, but actual production of patterns and so forth. A cobbler to make and repair shoes. And another one, and this one sort of surprised me, but it makes sense, was people that were really good cooks were really valuable because, you know, basically they had to make decent food for hundreds of people out of meager supplies that might change, you know, vary and change.
So you're saying there was a low demand to take care of all the Marxist literature?
Yeah, pretty much. And that's one thing that the book described is pretty much if you were, you know, unless you were a doctor or a nurse, if you were an intellectual, there was no use for you in the group. You became one of the little drudges that went around and, you know, clean clothes or whatever, emptied chamber pots.
But who can give the Marxist? Who can give you the Marxist interpretation of 50 Shades of Grey? Come on, man!
Anyway, I'm sorry. I probably didn't talk about witching gray.
Well, and in fact, you need to send a link to the book so that the missus can toss that into the description so other folks can find it. So, missus?
Yes.
In here, what are your thoughts about organizing at the end of the world?
Get to the chopper! That's pretty much it.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
That's right.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, you know, I just think okay, so you and I have this big disagreement, and a lot of this stems from watching the TV show The Walking Dead, right?
And you're echoing our comments right here as well, because we have some folks chatting along the line stream, and in fact, one of the comments from Quizzer, so everyone's here.
Hi, Quizzer.
Hi,
Quizzer. Hello.
Mark needs to watch more zombie movies where, after the event, the survivors are the real most.
Yeah, you know, they really... Okay, so that was kind of one of the things that I got a little worn out with on The Walking Dead, was it got to the point where that the zombies were just kind of an afterthought from the whole thing. And again, the real danger was from other people, right?
They were like trees.
Right, yes. Every now and then, you know, you'd have to take a chainsaw and mow several of them down, but other than that, they pretty much didn't get in their way anymore. It was, what horror can humans visit upon each other? And I think you see that as cultures kind of start to develop and move from that tribal stage, which you would be in initially, where you would just have little bands of people eking out survival as best they could, and then they would find each other and move into larger bands, and then you would have conflict between those larger bands. Until you got to the point where you had someone who had enough clout and, you know, willing to do the things that you would need to do in order to run a large group of people like that and keep everybody in line. And then suddenly you have something that's a little more like a functional, I don't know, maybe a city-state?
Yeah. So you're looking at essentially tribes coming together to create their own city-states, and then pretty soon you have Mesopotamia and taxes again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and
a roadmap to taxes after the apocalypse.
Well, isn't that in Stephen King's book, The Stand, right? Near the end of the book, where after the bomb's gone off, sorry, spoiler for those of you who haven't read it. Come on, it's like a 40-year-old book. Anyway, and they're talking about trying to create this new society, and one of the characters says, but the things we need that got us to the place where we were before, it's already here. They're just laying here waiting for us to pick them up and take them and use them again. We're going to end up back in the same situation.
The same processes always lead to the same result.
Yeah. Well, and that may be just...
Well,
just the way that we're programmed to proceed, you know? I don't know. Get some popcorn and see how this thing plays out.
It's almost like there's a plan. Almost like there's a higher purpose associated with it. It's crazy. That, right? Okay, Aqua Teen Hunger Force. There's my kryptonite. All right. All right. Well, Mark, do you have anything to sum this one up?
Well, first I'll note for the people saying I should watch more zombie movies. I always considered the zombies to be a metaphor for the cultural enrichment that would come out of cities into the suburban and rural areas after a major disaster. And I think, you know, I just sum it up. Yeah, blood's stronger than water, or thicker than water, I mean. And that's probably going to be the real core of any survival group. And that's it.
A very good point. Well, I just hear that any post-lock, if I can speak, I hear that in any post-apocalyptic, cannibals are going to be interested in consuming Amy Schumer because they're pretty sure she won't taste funny. Quizzer brought up Stephen King and said it's a valid point, but boo for Stephen King mention. Just steal it and make it yours. He does. The missus, tell me what you think about Stephen King. Three words. Describe Stephen King.
Self-important hack? It's hyphenated. Is that three?
There you go. I was expecting just a simple, he's a hack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I throw in my three words?
Sure.
What's his bet?
As long as they
say it again. Haven't you ever noticed that in almost all of his books, one of the characters inevitably will wet themselves?
Someone somewhere should do a Freudian write-up of Stephen King based on his books.
I believe all of them start with, the writer walked into the room.
All right. Let me guess, is this next book going to be about a writer from Maine? Yes.
It's always about a writer.
I'm shocked.
Okay, it's about time to wrap this up, folks. So next week, I have an idea, so let's talk it afterwards, after we wrap.
Are you ready for me to play this out? Are you ready for me to play this out?
Yes, I'm going to give a hint to our live audience. Think Back to the Past.
Okay, hang on. You're going to say that was too loud. That was too loud. Think what? I had it too loud. I didn't hear it, so.
There you go. And thank you once again for joining us. Are you going to play the music at all?
I didn't want it to be as loud.
I'm John.
I'm Mark.
And I'm the Mrs.
Y'all come back now. You hear?